to another episode of the Conversations with Authors podcast. I'm your host, Alison Thompson, aka the Proof Fairy. In each episode of this podcast, I talk to an author about what inspired them to start writing and what tips they would give other aspiring authors. Today is Brian Finney, an English literature professor and author of 7 books, including Literary Critique, Fiction, and a treatise on the effects of 9/11 on American society. His latest novel, Dangerous Conjectures, came out in March 2021. Set in the early days of the COVID pandemic, it explores the rise of conspiracy theories and how they affect relationships. Brian, thank you so much for being my guest on the podcast today. It's really lovely to meet you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. So you've written several books, haven't you? You've written everything from critical studies of English novelists to political fiction to suspense novels. So tell me a little bit about your books.
I started off with a very small book on Beckett that actually led to my meeting Beckett in Paris. Because I was writing about his most recent prose fiction, not his plays, which wasn't receiving very much attention and which, in my opinion, is absolutely, you know, revolutionary, really. I mean, it changed everybody's conception of it. So I started off doing that. And then I decided that I wanted to write a biography of Christopher Isherwood, because he was one of the two principal writers of his time to influence everybody who came after him. Well, it turned out, of course, you know, he emigrated to the United States, to California, to, in fact, Santa Monica, which is, you know, a couple of miles away from where I'm living now in Venice, California, just all part of Los Angeles. So that brought me over to the States for the very first time to interview him and all his friends. And that was quite an experience. And I'm happy to say that biography won the James Tate Black Memorial Prize for that year for biography.
Congratulations.
After that, sorry, go on.
I said congratulations.
Oh, I see. Thank you. A long time ago. And after that, I did a number of books associated with literature, because I am a literature professor, I teach literature, and in order to get on in the profession, you have to do it at any rate, whether you like it or not. But I did do it fairly broadly. For example, one book I wrote was on the literary autobiography as a genre, which made me concentrate on a lot of books that normally are not given that much attention, by famous authors of the 20th century, mainly. In 1987, I left London University and emigrated to the United States. And I did that in order to be able to teach and not have to teach an administration, which I was doing at London University, and the administration involved executing Margaret Thatcher's severe, ferocious cuts, which I didn't agree
oh,
with.
Oh gosh, yeah.
So I was happy to get over here and just teach. And that eventually led me I had to sort of reclimb the academic, you know, ladder to become a full professor. And then once I'd done that, I felt free not to have to write about English literature, which I love. This was after 9/11, and I was so astonished at the reaction to it over here that I wrote a book called Terrorized: How the War on Terror Affected American Culture and Society, which concentrated on things like people's paranoia, people's, you know, revenge as a sort of something that suddenly became respectable, torture, the militarization of the police force, all kinds of things that you know had happened as a result of that. It was way outside my academic field, but I still managed to you know, I mean, basically speaking, the expertise you acquire in researching a subject applies across the disciplines with a small number of, you know, specialist exceptions.
Yeah.
So that was the first book that I self-published. And I liked the experience because, you know, self-publishing means that you are in charge of your own, the entire process. You can decide on the date, you can decide on what how much you're going to spend and so on and so on. But it does, I mean, you know, there are so many books that are self-published these days that, you know, you can get lost in a sort of, you know, tunnel of books pouring out of the, you know, the virtual world.
Gosh, yes. Yeah. I don't know how many books are listed on Amazon at the minute, but zillions and probably, millions of them are self-published. Yeah. Very easy to get.
So you have to do something to really promote it. Mm-hmm. And in the case of my two novels, which I chose to self-publish, I got a really good publicist who has helped me a lot in you know, things like this, like, you know, being able to talk about it to people like you.
Thank you to your publicist then. So what are the two more recent novels?
Okay, well, you know, the first one was called Money Matters. Mm-hmm. And to the astonishment of my friends, it's told in the first person by a young American woman living here in Venice, California, at age 27.
Okay.
And, you know, when people say to me, why on earth, you know, I don't know, what made you do that? I wanted to have a character and a voice that was as unlike mine as possible. So, you know, I'm old, she's young, I'm English still in my expressions, she's American, I'm male, she's female. And it did take, the most difficult aspect of that was that it took a lot of getting rid of the anglicisms, you know, my normal English expressions. So many of my American friends had to read it and say, oh no, we say, you know, whatever it is rather than whatever it is. So it was about a young woman who's hasn't got a life together properly, who lives in, pays her sister rent for living in her apartment. And who does part-time work. And one of the places where she does part-time work is the CEO of, what you call it, a mutual fund company. His girlfriend goes missing, and the Spanish housekeeper asks her, as she works part-time for a detective agency, to investigate it. All she does at the detective agency is look through videos of, you know, that have come in from people on, out there. So she's not really a detective at all. So it gets very concerned with immigration. This is what I find with my novels. They have to have some kind of wider theme behind them. They're not just about the individual, although of course the individual is at the forefront. Mm-hmm. My current novel, Dangerous Conjectures, which came out in March, late March, is about a couple, a professional couple in Berkeley, California. Actually, they live in Oakland, which is right next to Berkeley, but it's the what's called the Bay Area around San Francisco.
Oh, yeah. I've read about the Bay Area books.
And he is, like me, he's a professor, but he's a professor of computer science. Mm. And she works at the ACLU in San Francisco. And the novel takes place between January and March of 2020. And in fact, the day that the novel ends is the day that the lockdown started for the pandemic. Okay. So she is extremely, she gets really stressed by the rise and spread of the virus. Mm. And that causes her to make some unsound decisions, including seeing an old flame of hers and trying to pacify him by having one appointment with him, which doesn't, of course, have the effect that she thought it would have. And she finds herself being, and the family, being stalked by him. At the same time, Adam, who is the computer science professor, is fascinated by the rise of QAnon. You know, he's a scientist. He believes in facts, in evidence. How could such a ridiculous theory about a demonic cult, you know, pedophiles, possibly, you know, arouse that kind of, you know, following. And so he joins a branch of it. Now, it doesn't have branches, but in my book, it's actually physical as well.
Right.
And yeah. he joins a branch of it in order to investigate what's going on and in order to understand what it is that appeals. And he begins to discover that it has links to the White House. And at the same time, his wife, Julia, is, what should I say, falling for these various conspiracy theories. Not that she fully believes in them, but she's fascinated by them because they offer her some kind of escape from the fear that she feels. Outside the front door.
Falling down the rabbit hole like many, many people did last year. Down that rabbit hole.
So she has a lot of problems. I mean, she starts using opioids as a way of, you know, controlling her anxiety. And the whole thing escalates in a way that I won't spell out.
No, please don't. No spoilers. but yes, bang up to date, that one. And very sort of, on current topics. One of the things I've often heard people say is write about what you know, but especially money matters. You said you wanted to write somebody completely the opposite to you. How easy was that to do then?
I mean, obviously, you know, you rely on your imagination, but what that means is that you get inside the character. You ask yourself, you know, how would this particular kind of person respond to this situation? And I find as soon as I get into dialogue and I have that voice in my head there, that the dialogue almost dictates itself. It tells you, you know, she can do this, she can't do that. She would say this, but she wouldn't say that. You know?
Right.
So that's really how it works.
Yeah.
So that's really, it is a matter of individual psychology.
That's something that I love. I've never written a novel. I will write a novel one day. I'm more of a nonfiction writer, but that is something that I always love hearing when people have developed a character so well that the character leads the story, the character takes over, and it's kind of almost not you writing it, it's the character telling you what to write. That was just such a magical thing to have happen.
It is when it happens, the writing then comes very easily too.
So how do you go about the actual writing process? I think the terms are planners and pantsers, aren't they? Are you
I'm between the two.
Okay.
I do an outline, but I don't do a very detailed outline. I do a very rough outline. Say, in Dangerous Conjectures, I actually did a day-by-day, you know, because I made each section, or I don't know, use chapters, but each section of the novel is a new day. Mm-hmm. So that however many days there are between that January and March date, there's a section.
Okay.
So, you know, I would have maybe a sentence for each section or something, just saying, you know, this is what happens and it happens, this is to whom it happens. But then when you start actually writing it, the character looks at you and says, no, I wouldn't do that. That's ridiculous. You know? So the actual writing will very often alter the outline. And as long as you stay within the parameters of the outline, it's fine. I mean, if you start drastically altering what happens, then you have to rewrite the outline, which is okay.
I guess it's like having, you've got a route planned out, but actually the route might deviate a little bit along the way, so long as you end up at the final points.
Or substantially, even as long as you can see it leading back, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's really interesting. Yeah, I think I'd probably be the same. I think I'd like to have a vague idea of where it's going, but not plan every single detail. But some people need to plan everything, don't they? Some people do.
Yeah, I know. No, I mean, and for that reason, and you know, I allow the writing process to be as instinctual as possible. I don't sit myself down at 9 o'clock every morning and write for 3 hours or whatever. You know, being not any longer teaching full time, I'm, you know, my own master, and I can say to myself, do I feel like it or not at any time of the day? And that feels great.
Okay. Yeah. So you just write when you're in the mood for writing, really.
Yeah. Which is frequent, you know, because I enjoy the writing. So it's not something I read or anything or force myself to do.
Yeah. So you said that you've had the three books, the terrorism book and the two novels, you self-published. Was that through Amazon or was that through a different platform?
The ebook was through Amazon. Mm. The audiobook was through Audible.
Yeah.
And the paperback was through something called Ingram Spark over here, which you know does this, what you say, publishing on demand. You know, mm-hmm. But of course, they're all three versions are available on Amazon.
Yeah, yeah. Why did you choose Ingram Spark rather than Amazon's print-on-demand service?
If I remember rightly, it's the early proofing process. You can get proofs from them without having to commit yourself to that or start again. It's technical more than anything.
Okay, yeah, and any regrets about self-publishing? I mean, would you ever sort of consider looking for a proper publisher, in air quotes there?
Well, I mean, of course, all my previous books did have proper publishers, and some of them were quite prestigious, like Faber and Faber. So, but I really like the freedom of being in complete control of deciding how much you're going to spend on publicity, of deciding, you know, how much time you're going to devote to making the book, apparent to everybody, etc. So, and also, of course, the royalty situation. I mean, the royalties are vastly different. I mean, you get like 70% of the, you know, of the cost of the book.
Yeah, on the e-books, it's really high, isn't it? Mm. There's also something really lovely, I think, about making a sale and knowing that it was your effort that made that sale, because you are the one that's promoting it, that's marketing it. Yeah, and being able to see the sales in real time as well, you know, so kind of knowing how the book's doing rather than waiting 6 months for your royalty check to come in from the publishers is nice as well.
Yeah, I mean, there is a residual snobbery, you know, about, oh, you know, this is by one of the five about to become four, you know, big publishers or something, that has a kind of prestige to it. But the authors who've done it, I mean, you know, if you take some of the most, you know, best-selling authors, they nowadays are preferring to self-publish because of that royalty difference too.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
And I think that snobbery's going. It's almost disappeared.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there was a time, I mean, I guess there was kind of, going back to sort of the late 80s, or well, the 80s and the 90s, there was vanity publishing, wasn't there, which was very different. Yeah. You know, give a printing company a load of money and they'll give you 1,000 books that you sit in your garage and are probably still there now. And I think self-publishing, print-on-demand publishing sort of came with that same sort of feeling,
aura, yeah,
didn't
yeah.
it? Yes, that same aura. But like you said, now very established, very famous authors are turning to it because they are in control and they can make more money. They're not giving so much money to the publishers who are maybe not doing a great deal for it these days either. I don't know.
Right, exactly. The publishers don't do very much publicity at all.
So obviously, you've been writing for kind of all your professional life, I guess, haven't you? Looking at your article list on your website. What have you learned about yourself through being a writer?
That's always difficult. For instance, with Dangerous Conjectures, there is a considerable, overlap between me and Adam, the computer scientist. Mm. And one of the things that emerges in the book is that Adam's absolute trust in scientific evidence and fact underplays the potency of emotion. I mean, you know, when he goes into look into QAnon, it's actually the emotion that it's emotionally driven. And what QAnon followers are following it for is for the feeling of being on the winning side. You know, their lives are a mess. They're on the losing side in, you know, jobs, housing, what have you. But you know, by belonging to this group, you're suddenly, you know, you're on the side of right and you're winning. So he, that realization on his part that when you pit facts against emotions, emotions will normally win, was something that he hadn't really taken into account properly.
Yeah.
And I think that was relatively autobiographical, that element. It's the one element in the novel that is perhaps drawn directly from my own experience. Or they intermingle, because when I say it's drawn from my experience, it became my experience. You know, it made me understand better. When I started writing that book, QAnon, none of my friends, QAnon, what's that? That was at the beginning of 2020, it wasn't known except by its follower. Yeah.
No, so, that's true. They sort of really came to the fore sort of towards the end of last year, didn't they? When it became, you couldn't go anywhere without reading, without hearing about what's going on.
Exactly.
I did have a couple of friends right at the beginning who were kind of talking about this thing that was going on, this conspiracy, this paedophile ring, the adrenochrome, the whole thing. And I was kind of, what are you talking about? What a load of old nonsense. But it really did seem to take hold, didn't it? And become quite a
big... Yes, it did. Yeah. And although, as you say, it died down to some extent, it's still quite powerful.
Mm, yeah, no, that's right. So the next question I've got down here is what's happened as a result of you becoming an author? We've been an author all your life, haven't you? So what has the life of an author been like for you? I mean, you're a professor alongside being an author, I guess, but what has the life of an author been like for you?
Well, I enjoy the fact that I have the opportunity to think something out very carefully, because, you know, when you write, it's not like talking. I mean, writing is a much more thoughtful process. Mm. And being able to leave a record of that careful thought process for others to share. And, you know, I mean, it's like leaving, I don't have children. But it's like leaving something behind for other people and other generations to make use of.
Yeah, making your mark in the world, your legacy for future generations.
Exactly.
It's a good thing to leave, definitely.
Turning to fiction after having taught works of fiction was quite a revelation.
Okay. Yeah.
So that definitely was a different experience and exciting and eye-opening in a way.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe one day people will be writing a critical study of your fiction. You never know. So with so much writing history behind you, what tips would you give to other aspiring authors?
I really think that they need to understand that nothing is ever finished, nothing is ever perfect, that it can always be made better, and to be open to suggestions from whatever quarter, even from, you know, negative criticism can sometimes be extremely helpful. In the case of Dangerous Conclusions, for example, one of my readers said, "You've made the reconciliation between Adam and Julia too easy." And that involved rewriting a considerable chunk of the book towards the end, but it made it better and it was worth doing.
Yeah.
So that my principal advice is to always be open to responding to criticism. Don't take criticism personally.
And be willing to take it on board and make changes, because it will ultimately make your book better.
Exactly.
Yeah, I guess as a writer, you could be too close to your own book, don't you? So you might think it's perfect, but it doesn't actually make sense, or there's something missing, and it takes somebody outside the book to see that.
Indeed. And there are so many different kinds of readers. So, you know, you need to take into account that variety of tastes and try and listen to it all.
Yeah.
Right. I also, because of that, feel that if a writer can afford it, they should always get professional editing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just makes so much difference.
It does. I think
just as they should get a professional for the cover.
That's the downfall of so many people self-publishing, I think, isn't it? That you do see a lot of books that fundamentally have a good story or have good ideas, but they're not well written. And with an editor, a proofreader, They could have been just made that bit better and sort of turned into much more professional readable books. And the same with the covers.
I agree.
Yeah, a lot of dodgy covers out there that wouldn't take a lot of work to look professional. So what's next for you? Have you got any more books to come?
What's next for me? Well, I'm not at all sure. As I've told you, I like to give my novels some kind of wider context, political and social background, And I'm particularly, if you like, aware of the fact that maybe the major problem facing not just America, but the world today is a disparity in income. So I'd like to, so I've been playing with the idea, but I don't know whether it'll ever come to anything yet, of confronting or juxtaposing, on the one hand, a middle-aged woman maybe who is living in her van, who's homeless, lost her job, and she parks it outside the house of one of the one percenters, a hedge fund manager or what have you, and who tries to get rid of her, of course, and she's obstinate and doesn't move. And then eventually they start to communicate, and sooner or later she moves into the house. So, you know, basically speaking, the two sides gradually come to understand more about the very different life that the other is leading. But that it's got to have more. That in itself is not enough. It's got to have some kind of excitement to it, which I have to yet think out.
Yeah, some jeopardy along the way.
Yeah.
So where can people find you online? Where can they find out more about you?
They can find more about me on my website, which is bhfinney.com. bhfinney.com.
bhfinney.com.
Also, they can go to my Amazon page, you know, just under Brian Finney, and they'll find all the books that are still available there, including, of course, Dangerous Conclusions.
Okay, that's great. So that's where people can find you. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. It's been really lovely to meet you and to find out more about you.
Well, same here.
Brian, for being my guest on the show today. You can find out more about Brian on his website, bhfinney.com. That's bhfinney.com. And his books are, of course, available on Amazon. Just search for Brian Finney. You can find out more about me and the services I offer authors on my website, www.theproofferry.com. You'll also find all the episodes of this podcast there, along with information on how authors can be guests on my show. If you like this podcast, then please subscribe, share it, rate it, tell your friends about it, and review it. This has been a Proof Fairy production in collaboration with my dogs. Apologies for the occasional interruption. One of them had a cough today. And I'll be back next week with another inspiring interview with another amazing author.